RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to National Bugle Radio. National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. Today, oh, by the way, go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on the button. Click on the button that says donate. That's the right button to click on. And send some shekels. I was going to talk about this weekend. Let's talk about this weekend. We're trying to reach Mark Colette. It's Monday, and he's somewhere there standing by, but we're having a little bit of trouble reaching him right now. But in the meantime, I wanted to tell this to Mark, but you never guess where I went this weekend. Where do you think I went this weekend? No, I didn't go to the Unite the Right rally in D.C. I had some business today that precluded me from being in D.C. yesterday. But where I did go yesterday was the zoo. And I'm, walking around the zoo and I see the elephants, the tiger, the gorilla, the aardvark. And, I'm sitting there looking at the giraffe and looking at that giraffe. He's standing there on his... those long legs on the hooves, and I look up at him, and he's chewing his cud. I'm thinking to myself, yep, a Jew could eat that thing. And it's right, a Jew could eat that thing because it's kosher. And it is a animal with a cloven hoof, chews its cud. That thing is kosher. So I get out my Kosher-tified app, and, they have a lot of sections. There's a section I want to talk about another day. It's all about, all of these things that you don't even eat, like dish soap, but are still, styrofoam plates. They're still certified kosher. Lysol. But, no, they don't have a section on zoo animals, which, I was walking around. I was thinking, okay, the giraffe kosher. What about that aardvark? It looks kind of like it's got a cloven hoof, but I don't think it chews a cud because it eats ants. So it wouldn't be kosher. But the penguin. Why not a penguin? Because it's got feathers. Birds. I'm going to be talking to the kosher-tified developers about that. But the thing is, I was thinking to myself, kosher-tified. It's all about the products that are not certified kosher. And, a giraffe, it's on the cloven hoofs, it chews its cud. It should be kosher, but, what rabbi is going to go and certify kosher, right? I mean, they don't go around to zoo animals and certify them kosher, right? Wrong. Wrong. So... I come home and I like to research these things. I want to know what I'm talking about. So, and we got Mark Colette. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. For some reason, your Skype call didn't call me. I had to actually check it, and it was saying that there was a call without actually giving me any tone or anything.
Oh, and you missed the whole beginning of the show. I was talking about what I did over the weekend. What do you think I did over the weekend?
I'm not sure. What did you do over the weekend? Have trouble with Skype?
I went to the zoo.
Oh, excellent.
Saw the giraffe, and you know what it made me think? The audience already knows. Don't tell them. What did I think when I saw the giraffe?
I'm not sure. What did you think?
A Jew could eat that thing. because it's, according to the Bible, it's kosher, right? It's got the cloven hoof and it chews its cud. But I thought, you know, and I got out my kosher certified app. It wasn't on the list because I thought, well, you know, rabbis don't go around and certify zoo animals as being kosher, right? Wrong.
But you can.
So no, they do. So I do my research. I pull up the Telegraph. You know the Telegraph. It's one of the papers on your side of the pond. And I pull up this article, and this is from 10 years ago. It's from June 2008. Headline, Giraffe is Kosher. Rabbis rule in Israel. Okay. Here, let me just read you a couple paragraphs. According to a report in the Yedioth Ahronoth newspaper, vets were asked to treat an adult female giraffe in Israel's largest zoo, the Safari Park in Ramat Gan. The team, led by Professor Zohar Amar, took a routine sample of milk and found that it clotted in the way required by Jewish law for kosher certification. They submitted more milk for verification by the rabbinical authorities, and the paper reported that a ruling was made that giraffe meat and milk are acceptable for observant Jews. Wow. The giraffe belongs to a family of grazing animals that have cloven hooves and chew the cud, thereby making them consistent with kosher rules, but the milk test was the final confirmation. Quote, "Indeed, the giraffe is kosher for eating," said Rabbi Shlomo Mahfood, who accompanied the researchers on the world. So literally Rabbi Shlomo Mahfood, not your food, but Mahfood. So there you have it. And I'm going to have ask the kosher-ified people, when they come out with the next version, to include zoo animals, because it's fun.
It certainly is. It's educational.
Very educational. So but maybe I'll talk more about that on another show. There was other stuff going on over the weekend besides my little visit to the zoo. And I assume that you heard something about it, Jason Kessler's
Unite the Right.
And, you know, he was on the show last week. We had him on, I think it was Tuesday, the day after you were on.
Okay.
And talked about it some. What do you think of it? How do you think it came off?
I'm not the biggest fan. I've said this before. You know, nothing against Jason Kessler. I'm sure he's a principled man. I'm sure he's doing this for the right reasons. But I'm not a fan of it. I don't believe that's the way to go, and I'll explain why. Getting 24 people to turn out against thousands and thousands of opposition does not make us look good. It doesn't make us look strong. It doesn't make us look powerful. It makes us look small and weak, and it isn't the way to go. You see, the other side, and when I say the other side, I mean the socialists, the liberals, Antifa, your anti-racist groups, all of these have big funding, and they have big funding from big name organizations. And these big name organizations that give these groups the big funding have almost a limitless pot. So we've seen this here in the UK. You'll have like the Trade Union Congress or other trade union groups. And these trade unions will say to people, well, you know, if you want to get a few buses together, we'll pay for the coaches. So you'll have several coachloads of people turn up, all funded by the union groups. Now, the problem you've got there is if we were to get people along, you know, several coachloads, we would have to pay for the coaches, people would have to get buses, people would have to get trains, they would have to fund their own travel. But the left don't. So it gives them a huge advantage. You know, they have paid operatives turning up, and they will mass in number, and their side do not face losing their jobs. They do not face any kind of censure for attending these kind of events. So because of that, they outnumber us, and the violence they commit against us, the hate they project at us, is all completely supported by these money groups, by the system. And because of that, they get bigger numbers. Now, if you are facing a better armed, a better funded, a better trained group that can pull out all the stops and will outnumber you in open warfare, what you must do is go to guerrilla tactics. You must change the way you fight. You can't say, you know, if you've got the might of Russia or America bearing down on you, you can't say, right, let's have a tank battle. We're going to have this tank battle on the 16th of August in this field. Let's do it. Because you're going to get smashed. A full frontal offensive, when you're the smaller, less funded group, does not work. What you need to do is think clever. You need to box clever. You need to alter your tactics to suit your strengths. And as a smaller, less funded group, and we're not smaller in terms of public support, because the public does support us, the public does like us, but sometimes they can be scared to get involved because of some of the stigmas attached to what we do. So we have to box clever. We have to change our approach, and our approach must change in a number of ways. And one of those is, like, if we get 100 people to turn up somewhere and do a torchlit procession and hear a couple of speeches, then raise a mighty banner saying no to white genocide. Wow, doesn't that look good? Doesn't it look impressive? There was no conflict, there was no fighting, there was no violence. It was us in a choreographed event that played to our strengths. That's what we need to do. But but if we do it the other way, all that ends up happening is we turn up, we get small numbers, we get thousands and thousands of lefties turning up who then throw abuse at us, pelt us with rotten fruit and vegetables, and it just becomes a pantomime. And I understand, don't get me wrong, I understand Jason Kessler's frustration. I understand why he did this. I understand why he wanted to hold an event like this. Shows of strength are great, but only when you're in a position to do them. And unfortunately, whether Jason Kessler or anyone else on the alt-right, you know, thinks we're in that position now, they're mistaken. We're not. We need to do things that benefit us, play to our strengths, and we need, instead of doing these big showpiece events that backfire, we need to get people into community politics. And it's not just me saying this. Richard Spencer said exactly the same thing. I believe that numerous people who were all at the first Unite the Right in Charlottesville all stayed away. I don't think David Duke was there. I don't think Richard Spencer was there. I don't think Mike Enoch was there. They're three of the biggest leaders of the right in America, and all three of them stayed away. And they stayed away because they've seen these things aren't benefiting us, and this event wouldn't help us. And sadly, they were right. 24 people.
Yeah, but I have a slightly different take on it. I think everything you said was sensible. And lots of people, you know, all those people you meant, not only did they not attend, but, you know, people like Mike Enoch and Andrew Anglin in particular, were pretty forceful in discouraging
people from going.
Yeah, discouraging people from going. I actually think it worked out very well that way. And now, I had Jason Kessler on. He asked to come on, and I had him come on. And, you know, I asked him about these other people's concerns, and he addressed them. And, you know, he had some reasons, some better than others. And he had his say. I wished him good luck. You know, I'm not a strategist. I'm more of a policy analyst. So I didn't really have a position of, you know, I wasn't going to renounce it. I wasn't going to announce support for it. And, you know, I wasn't in a position to go anyway. And I think, though, it worked out actually pretty well, because everybody else was discouraging people from going. If he had showed up with a few hundred people in the face of like 10,000 or 20,000, however many it was, of these demonstrators, it would have looked pathetic. I think to show up with, it looked to me like a dozen, maybe it was two dozen, a tiny number. I think there was two good things that came out of it. One is, you know, the more numbers that are there, the more likely it is there's going to be some loose cannon who's going to do something stupid to make the whole thing look bad, right? It was probably just a few people that he knew pretty well, and he was able to keep an eye on things, and nobody did anything that looked stupid. And then the other thing is it made those very few individuals look very brave in the face of, you know, these like being outnumbered perhaps 500 or 1,000 to one. But more than that, you know, because not only did they have the counter demonstrators in Washington, they had these counter demonstrators in Charlottesville where there was no demonstration to counter. And in Charlottesville, they were, you know, they were having conflict with the police. You know, there was some pushing of the police and throwing stuff at police. And there was in Washington, there's tear gas used. And while the media narrative is going to be very dismissive at best and hostile at worst, a lot of people are going to be able to see past it because they're going to see the images and say, okay, so here this guy showed up. He didn't even have a white nationalist message, right? I mean, he had actually kind of a civic nationalist or just a MAGA message. I mean, he said white people deserve civil rights. And then he had, you know, this black guy with him and, you know, an Asian guy with a black guy. And it didn't look like an alt-right or white nationalist event, and it really wasn't. But even then, even the most innocuous of statements and this tiny group of people that wasn't even like a white group of people was still facing all of the abuse and threats. And, you know, and they were in the counter demonstrators. There were people who were saying that Trump should be killed and that they would like to do it themselves. I think it was not that it was good for us so much, but I think it was bad for the Antifa and bad for the left. So that's kind of my take on it. I think it would not have worked out well if 500 people went or 200 people went. But I think in a weird way, having almost nobody go, and in Charlottesville, absolutely nobody, I think that kind of worked out well. What do you think?
Well, I've just got to disagree with you on a couple of points. Firstly, the people on the right at the moment are absolutely obsessed with whether things have worked out well for Antifa, whether things are working out well for them. Things don't have to work out well for Antifa. You see, what Antifa wants, they are getting. And they are getting, broadly speaking, from every political party. Say here in the UK, the Antifa message is open borders, it's unchecked immigration, it's basically the push for increased degeneracy, it's the push for normalization of transgender rights, of homosexuals being to adopt, whatever madness, sickness, degeneracy you can think of, that is the Antifa message. That is what these people want. And that is what they're getting. Whether we like it or not, that is what these people are getting. And the politicians are supporting that wholeheartedly and without reservation, whether it be conservative or whether it be left-wing. So they don't have to appeal to the public. Antifa don't have to win public support because they are getting what they want via the establishment. So they can go out and fight with the police all day and doesn't matter. Because the next round of elections, the people who support Antifa, the people who are passing policy that pleases Antifa, those people are going to get re-elected. On the other hand, we are trying to build a movement, a mass movement, to overthrow this corrupt liberal regime that is foisting this sickness and this madness upon our people. Now, the truth of the matter is, we are the ones that need public support.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll continue this discussion after the break. Okay.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down and, I have to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit partdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to National Bugle Radio. So, you were talking, and of course, we were talking during the break. I want to make sure that we don't skip anything. We were talking about the leadership or lack of leadership that we have. But continue your thoughts.
Well, no, I was more or less saying that we are the ones that have to gain public support. We are the ones that have to win the public over to our way of thinking so we can replace these traitorous politicians who are absolutely destroying any chance we have for racial survival. But the problem we've got is our people are sadly completely obsessed with, have Antifa, upset the public? Have Antifa lost public support? Are the public sick of Antifa? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah. The public can be 100% sick of them, but they have to get to power.
Yeah, this one, of course, I think it was more than just Antifa. It was the Black Lives Matter. It's the whole organized.
But again, they don't have to. Black Lives Matter don't have to win power. The Democrats will do it for them, and so will sizable parts of the Republican Party too. Like here in the UK, Theresa May just gave a speech. When I say just gave, I mean this year, a month ago, 2 months ago, it doesn't matter, saying we have to stop people calling transgenders mentally ill. They're not mentally ill. The destruction of our people doesn't have to be carried out by Black Lives Matter, by Stonewall, by, you know, any of these sort of more extreme or more verbose groups, the political parties that are seen as mainstream are doing this for them. And we have to be aware that whilst Black Lives Matter and Antifa don't need public support, we do, because we have to get into community politics, get people elected, and remove the people from power who are essentially pushing this. And that's why Antifa are at such an advantage, because they do not need public support in the same way that we do. You know, they will carry on being well-funded. They will carry on being well-supported by the media. If you remember at the last Charlottesville demonstration, after that, every politician barring Trump had not one word of condemnation for Antifa, but attacked us. But even though Antifa was clearly in the wrong, they're never going to need to get elected. They are the system's foot soldiers and should be treated as such. That we need to forget about Antifa and start thinking about the head of the snake.
Okay, and that's all very reasonable. But imagine yourself, and you're an American TV watcher. You watch TV, and so you know a year ago you saw the media was able to show images of the car crash and the guys with the shields and this and that, and they could manipulate the images whatever they wanted, whatever the way they wanted. Now this year, he had like Jason Kessler and this other guy, and they're wearing business suits, and you know, then a black guy and a Chinese guy. I guess the Chinese guy was wearing a business suit. Just a few guys, and they're walking around with American flags, and Kessler in his interviews is saying very, very mild things. I mean, the most out there thing he's saying is, well, white people's civil rights are being impinged on, or white people have a, you know, they should be able to have civil rights. And it was just very, very mild. And yet, not only are they surrounded by this giant mob and have to have all of the DC police force surrounding them in order to protect them, but then all the people on TV are denouncing them as horrible white supremacists. And the message was, you know, I mean, it was as unaggressive and as meek and mild as they come, and yet they were still renounced that way. What do you think the average TV viewer is going to think about that?
Well, I think the average TV viewer is going to look at that, and they will probably think they're being treated unfairly. They'll probably think, oh, well, you know, it'll just be another example of how the media treats us with disrespect, how the media treats white people with disrespect. And there is a little bit of mileage to be gained from that. But ultimately, as I said, this was something that it's not directly leading to anything. And if anything, this has shown. Now, the alt-right doesn't have a leadership panel. We're not a political party. We are not an organization in the terms of like the British National Party used to be in the UK, where you have a leader, where you have a deputy leader, where you have a head of publicity and a treasurer and a chairman. It's not that. The alt-right is a loose collection of people who have an alignment of ideas. And what do I mean by an alignment of ideas? Well, ultimately, the one thing that sort of holds us together is that we all support white survival. That's the one sort of overwhelming thing that we all support. We all support the continued existence of the white race. However, in this case, we have actually seen literally every leader of the alt-right come together and not support this event, which is very
tough. Right. And that's important. Let's talk about that after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
Back to the show, National Bugle Radio, Patrick Slattery and Mark Collette. And Mark, you were just making the point before the break that all of the big figures in the nationalist right or alt-right or however you want to describe it, they were all staying away and many kind of vocally disavowing.
Well, yeah, I've not really seen this before, because people say in the alt-right it is just it's a loose collection of different groups and individuals who have different ideas on many things. You have people who are libertarians. You have people who are, you know, nationalists. You have people who are very much traditionalists, Christians, pagans, but they all have the idea of white preservation at heart. The continued existence of white people is at the forefront of these people's minds. So, of course, you have differences. You have differences of opinion on tactic, differences of opinion on policy, differences of opinion on what should or shouldn't happen should we actually take power. And one thing that's amazed me is you've got all these people. You've got David Duke. You've got Mike Enoch. You've got Andrew Anglin. You've got Chris Cantwell. You've got Jared Taylor, you've got Greg Johnson, you've got all these, Richard Spencer. They're the probably, and if I've missed anyone out that I shouldn't have, I deeply apologize, but they're some of the biggest names on the alt-right in the whole of America. And not one of those people came out in support of this event. Not one of those people turned around and said, you know what, this is the event, we have to get there, guys. In fact, all of them were absent. And all of those people were, I believe, either at Charlottesville or, you know, were supportive of it, or at least didn't say, don't go. You know, all those other people were there. But this time, we've got a very, very different outlook. We've got all these people saying, nah, not only am I not going, but I don't want you to go. And in a way, Unite the Right, number two, has actually done that. It's united the right in opposition to those kind of events. So, well, you know, in a way, you could say Kessler has actually achieved something. He has brought everybody on the alt-right together in agreement that those kind of events are grossly flawed and are not helping our cause. And if that's progress, well, great, he's done that. But it's certainly not the progress he was hoping for. And I think it also shows that our people are learning. Our people are learning that turning up for these big, choreographed, confrontational demos isn't helping the cause. I think it's shown that people, and even people who are seen as very, how can I say it, very much on the right, people like Andrew Anglin, who would be seen by the press and the public as probably the most far right of all those that I've mentioned, even he doesn't want to do this. Even he isn't down for another one of these violent events, one of these events where our people are going to get injured, where our people are going to get arrested, where our people are going to get dragged off. I mean, and that was the result of Charlottesville. You know, and I think there's a certain degree of maturity coming out of the alt-right here, where the leaders are not only looking after the movement, but they're also looking after their members, their supporters. They're saying, we don't want our membership being put through this again. We don't want the people who have supported us year in, year out, who have donated, who have shared our content, who have been generous, who have, you know, given time and effort towards our campaigns. We're not going to put those good people through another one of these meat grinders. And that is maturity. That shows a degree of maturity. And for that, I am 100% happy.
Okay. Now, I had Jason on, last week. And, you know, one of the things we talked about was the venue, the change in venue. And you know, by the way, I didn't endorse this and I didn't disavow it. I was basically neutral on it. And Charlottesville happened a year ago. And it's not as if it happened and everybody recognized it as a disaster and stopped doing these events. And I've always had mixed feelings about these events. And, you know, I've talked about my own experience in demonstrating in the Vietnam War era or in the Iraq War era. The part of the benefit of demonstrating was so people could get together and meet each other and make contacts and network, which even in 2003, the internet was kind of in its infancy. Some people were in it, but certainly before that, it was so in order to disseminate information. In 2003, there was no YouTube, for instance, right? I mean, we forget how far things have come in terms of our ability to communicate with each other. And so I've made the point, I'm not sure if, at least some of the functions of demonstrations are no longer necessary because of the internet. So yeah, so I've never been, I've always been kind of two opinions about this. I mean, there's a point of going out and, making people feel motivated. And of course, this wasn't going to make very many people feel motivated. I think to the extent it was a success, it was largely a success because it wasn't a big rally, because it was as tiny as it could be. I think with a couple hundred people, it would have looked ridiculous. But with a few dozen people, I think everybody else looked ridiculous except for those couple of dozen people. But one thing I wanted to get to was
you know, we don't have a party. We don't have any real organization. It's all so loose. And one of the things that results from that is people are making big decisions, often very independently. And Jason Kessler made this decision, and people knew about it. And eventually, I mean, within the past few weeks, people were speaking out against it, or at least the past couple of weeks. You know, initially, I think people were toying with the idea to an extent. But, you know, it's not as if the Charlottesville happened and these rallies stopped. Remember, Richard Spencer kept doing these rallies all, you know, up until, I think, the spring, and before he finally stopped. And I agree with you. I don't think they're really all that helpful. I'm not going to, you know, like this one, I think it was lucky. And I think it was lucky in large part because it was basically boycotted by the rest of the alt-right, which made it into something so small. But the one point I want to raise, though, is without any leadership, like centralized leadership or, you know, any kind of organization, people are just making big decisions that impact lots of people on their own. And Jason did this. And you could certainly make the case it was reckless, you know, it was or ill-advised. I think it turned out okay, and I think that was lucky. But he took a big decision. It's like a ball player, a soccer player or a basketball player, and the whole team, the coach wants him to do one thing. He does something else. Maybe he scores, but you know, he went against what everyone else did. But he's not the only person. You think of Andrew Anglin, who I think has done great things. But Andrew Anglin, without consulting anybody, as far as I know, made the decision right after Charlottesville to put up a post that was saying that, you know, it was a good thing that Heather Heyer died, because if she had lived, she was fat and she just would have cost the taxpayers a lot of money. That is what triggered the giant deplatforming. Now, as far as I understand, Andrew Anglin was purposely trying to trigger a First Amendment crisis. And maybe in retrospect, you know, we're seeing, like, it's been going on for the past year. It's been difficult for a lot of people, but it's gotten to the point, it's spread to the point where somebody like Alex Jones is deplatformed, and it might well work out very much to our advantage. And people might look back on it at some point and say it was brilliant. But, you know, it was a decision he made by himself, and it has had a lot of impacts. And Dr. Duke, too. And I have a small role in this. When he endorsed Donald Trump, was that something that he did on his own? And it caused Donald Trump a weekend of or a few news cycles of some trouble where everybody was talking about David Duke endorsed you. David Duke endorsed you. That might have turned out for the best. That might have turned out to be a good thing for him. It's hard to say. I mean, you know, a lot of these things you can never really tell whether it was good or not. So I don't know. I'm not really trying to defend or attack Jason Kessler. We're in a situation where we don't have organization, and it's really hard for us. I mean, you make a good point that in this case, it was about as clear as it could be that leading people were unified against his decision. But what I'm just trying to point out is we're in this stage where individuals are making big decisions that impact lots of people without consultation, and to a large extent, we just don't have the vehicle. We don't have the means for consultation. What do you think about that?
I think there's a big difference between being provocative in the way that sort of Andrew Anglin's been or David Duke's been with the Trump thing and what's happened here with the Unite the Right, and I'm going to explain why. Firstly, I'm a big believer in jumping on populist bandwagons and letting the public know that we are more similar to the public than the press or the media would like the public to think. So when David jumped on board with the Trump bandwagon, it was very similar to myself and others in the UK jumping on board the Brexit bandwagon. And what we're saying is we actually support and believe exactly what this particular mainstream event or person is aligning towards. And that's very important because we constantly need to close the gap between us and the public's perception of us. So by turning up at like a Trump rally or a Brexit rally and being like, hey, we are the people who have been fighting for these things for long before you were even aware of these things, it gives us legitimacy. And that's one of the reasons I like that film, The Black Klansman, because it has a number of scenes where the character portraying David Duke is saying things like, America first. It's saying things like, we need to build a border wall. We need to patrol our borders. Now, it's very important for the public to realize that we are the ones that started the fire under the issue of immigration. And we should be credited for that. And the public should essentially be aware that we have been fighting for this fight for so long. And we will continue fighting for this fight, even if it becomes unpopular. And even if Donald Trump gives up on it. And that's another reason why I fought for Brexit, because I wanted the public to see nationalism associated nakedly with the Brexit campaign. So if Brexit was betrayed, the public would say, well, look, these guys are still there. These guys are still fighting for what we voted for and what we believe in. And that's very, very important. So I think that's a good thing, but I think that's very different from the actions of Jason Kessler. I think it's completely different, in fact. I think that the actions of Jason Kessler are not provocative in that way. They don't align the public particularly with our thinking. They don't make the public think, oh, these guys who we've been told for years are the bad guys, they're actually saying what we're voting for. I think what Jason Kessler's done is he hasn't heeded the warnings from the past. And it seems everyone else has, which in a way is a very good thing. And as I said, if the message was to unite the right, he has done that, but not in the way he thought he was going to. He has united people against him. He has united people against these big sort of ego-driven rallies. And I'm not saying the man's a total egotist, but I am saying there is a large degree of ego in decisions to hold these rallies. There is a large degree of, look at me, I want to be doing this, I want to be at the forefront, I want to be seen as a revolutionary and I'm leading our people to victory. There is a large degree of that. And I'm not saying it's all selfish, but it's certainly not all selfless, that's for sure. And I've seen this in the UK with some of these big rallies where the same people keep calling for them, the same people keep marching at the front, keep saying, we will keep coming back, we will keep coming back, we will keep coming back. And there's fewer and fewer people going, but the person at the front, he can't let go. He can't say, you know what, maybe this isn't the best idea, maybe we should step back, maybe we should take stock of what's happened. And I think sometimes it takes a bigger man to say, you know what, I need to back down from this one. This one isn't, you know, the right way forward. A tactical retreat is exactly that, a tactical retreat to fight another day and to regroup and find a better strategy, a better way of breaking through your enemy's lines. And so far, everyone seems to have learned that except for Jason Kessler.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not sure if everybody's actually learned that. Certainly the people that you're talking about that you've mentioned they're not for the big rallies anymore. There were people who were at Unite the Right who didn't go to Jason Kessler's event, but I don't know if it was necessarily because they've decided against these big events, or if it's because they weren't. That they perhaps didn't like the direction that Jason Kessler was going to lead the rally. Not that they had something against the rally, but you know, he wound up with a black MC, and it was
he had like a dress code and you know, various codes.
Well, I think a dress code's good. I think a dress code's good. And I want to make it clear here that for anyone who's a big supporter of Jason Kessler, I have nothing against him personally. I'm not saying he's a bad egg. I'm not saying he's, you know, the devil incarnate or somebody that shouldn't get any respect from anyone. You know, as far as I'm concerned, he's a brave man. You know, he didn't look bad at this event. I just feel he took the wrong tactic. And I feel that more or less everyone else agrees with me on that.
Well, you know, because we don't have a central committee or organizing committee or, you know, a political party or anything like that, these discussions have to take place in venues just like this, like on our podcast, because that's the one thing we do have, is we have these, you know, these various podcasts. We'll be back right after the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
So there does seem to be a growing consensus that the giant rallies aren't going to be the thing, you know, it's not going to be the big thing for the next months and year, and, you know, for the foreseeable future. And of course, in the United States and in Great Britain at this point, political party organizing too. I mean, you've got like dozens of tiny little fractured parties, and we don't have really much of any kind of party.
It would be nice to get some candidates. That could happen, but the candidates we had in this election were few and far between. I know there are a few, but so what next? Where do we go?
Well, we go to where our people need us, which is to them. Our people need us. And we have to take the message to them. We have to find a way to link this online revolution to normal people. And if that means going out with flyers with, you know, YouTube, Mark Collett, YouTube, David Duke, you know, www.Rents Radio, www.Republic Radio, you know, all of these things on them and just putting them on lampposts or shoving them in people's doors, great. But we need to get normal people who are out there on the street listening to these shows and engaging with our politics. And we're not going to do that when we're outnumbered 20 to 1 at some tiny little piffling rally, 100 to 1 at some tiny little piffling rally. That isn't going to get the message to our people. We need to directly engage with the public like we used to when we were in the BNP. And if we don't do that, the public ain't listening. I went out at the weekend and there were some people with me who were all into the YouTube scene, into the online meme scene. And there were some people who were old BNP members who aren't into all that, but have been nationalists all their lives, who voted Brexit, who campaigned for Brexit, who stood as council candidates in the BNP. And the disconnect was huge. Normal folks don't understand exactly this internet subculture we've built, and we need to bring normal folks on board or we're going to get bred out.
Mm-hmm. So I've mentioned this a few times before. In the United States, in a way, it's not like this in Europe. There is such an urban-rural divide. The urban areas where population densities are high, these are basically going to be enemy territory. So it's very hard to have any kind of big rally. But the one exception is Donald Trump goes around and he can attract 12,000, 15,000 people into an airport hangar or a hockey stadium in these out of the way places like Duluth, Minnesota. And I thought it would be a good idea to piggyback on his crowds, not to organize our own crowds, piggyback on his crowds and do in a kind of low profile way, exactly the type of thing that you're talking about. Like maybe just hold a sign saying it's okay to be white or hand out some flyers, you know, without attracting too much attention. What do you think of that type of thing?
That's good, you know, but it's still got to be interacting with our people, directly with people who we don't usually reach. But anyway, thank you for having me on, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
See you on Wednesday. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network.